Welcome to the end of the weekend.
Please don't let today be Monday. Please don't let today be Monday. Please, 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 please don't let today be Monday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
And then what followed was bad even by Monday standards.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Nobody pray for me. It been a day for me.
Welcome back to the show. Last hour was intense. I thought maybe we'd turn it down a little bit, slow down a little bit, but no, Charlie's bringing in heavy beat. Bringing in that heavy bass. And I'm fine with it. Let's keep it up. The phone number is 913-3810-810. Had a bunch of Macklin calls. Last hour I got one here holding over. I am happy, genuinely. Like, I will be content in my soul if we just have calls come in for the rest of this hour just agreeing with me about Jeremy Macklin. Or not agreeing. That's fine. We can argue or disagree. But I'm completely content to talk about this for an hour, even though it's kind of weird because we've been having this conversation for like 4 or 5 weeks. Also, happy Father's Day. Let's go to the phones. 913-3810-810. Let's go to John. John, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Joshua. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
Happy Father's Day to everybody out there. I think with the Macklin situation, what we're dealing with is the Chiefs aren't going to say they're rebuilding and looking to build something up in the future for Mahomes. But I think that's exactly what they're doing. He's more injury prone than he has been in the past. It's not going to get any better as he gets older. We're looking at Mahomes maybe 2, possibly 3 years down the road as far as really moving us up. And by then, Macklin's worth to us will be probably very little. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'll be older. He still has the injury issues. And I think without telling us they're rebuilding, that's exactly what the Chiefs are doing. I think they're going to push Smith along next year if Mahomes shows any promise at all. That'll free up money under the cap, and Macklin leaving pulls money under the cap. I think they'll go for some downfield receivers and hopefully a good defensive end. And I think that's where they're going without telling us. I don't think they want to tell us that because they want to keep the fans coming in, and we will anyway. We've always supported the Chiefs.
Yep.
But I think that's what the Macklin deal is really all about, is looking to the future. And I don't know if his agent talked to the Chiefs. He says he didn't. I don't know if his agent did. But I think that's what it's really all about.
John, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And I agree with you in a whole lot of pieces there. I think at the very least, you can say definitively, that's the logical conclusion to come to. You cut a valuable asset. If not your number one receiver, you cut a very valuable asset. It undeniably makes you worse this year. So why do you do it? To prepare for the future. Apparently, it was more worthwhile to cut Macklin this year as far as the 2018 cap situation. They're still going to have to pay him $4.8 million in 2018. They're going to be paying him a lot of money to play for the Ravens in 2018. But I think, first of all, if Mahomes shows any inclination by the end of this season to be a starter, then he will be the guy going into 2018. And he should be, because, again, if when you're playing this cap space game, throughout the NFL, I think you can win one of two ways. You either have an elite quarterback, or you have a cheap quarterback who's playing beyond his means and playing beyond his number. If that is something that's within the Chiefs' grasp, then they're going to take it as soon as possible. If Mahomes plays at the exact efficiency as Alex Smith, but at a way cheaper number, even if he's a little worse than Alex Smith at a significantly cheaper number, you have a very good chance to have a better team, because then you can afford to extend Marcus Peters and Dee Ford, if that's what you want to do. At the Dee Ford conversation, we can have that some other day. But you extend Marcus Peters, you eventually extend Tyreek Hill, you bring in another receiving option. You know, if this was 2018, You're either going to believe more in Chris Conley, or if Eric Decker was released next year, you say, oh, you know what, this Eric Decker thing actually makes sense here. You bring in Decker to go with the rest of these guys, and you are building for Mahomes. And this is something where I might have to take a little nibble of some crow. During the NFL draft, people were saying, you know, this seems like a team that's preparing for next year. They trade up a lot of assets for Patrick Mahomes, and they draft Hanno Passanio, who is a guy at a defensive end who seems like he's probably a year out and then could be a monster. I kind of poo-pooed that because you don't usually give up a pseudo-contending year in the NFL for the sake of the future, even though sometimes it's the smart move. Now, again, if the Chiefs are going to really do it and just brazenly say, we don't give a bleep about this year, what matters to us is being ready for Mahomes next year, then they could have cut Alex Smith and saved a ton of cap money and move that whole trend going. Now, what they're doing instead is they're going to give us some interesting, good football. And if Chris Conley takes a big step forward and if Tyreek Hill starts to look like DeSean Jackson, then they're going to be what they were last year. And because last year, the offense, keep in mind, was not good enough. So if the offense takes a small step back and the defense is going to be healthier this upcoming year than it was last season. You're in the second year of Chris Jones. You've got a little bit more stability at the second cornerback spot, potentially. That's good. But also, the scoring defense last year was, I would argue, unrepeatable. So the team is going to be very interesting this year, but it almost feels a little bit disingenuous, if that makes sense. Because we know they're not selling out to win this year, which that can be good. I would not, at this point, want the Chiefs to mortgage the future to try to win this year. Because their best chance at winning a Super Bowl, it's like with the Royals. We talked about this with the Royals earlier. The best chance at winning a Super Bowl is 2 years from now. Because Alex Smith is not going to be a Super Bowl winning quarterback in the kind of active sense. And the Chiefs have some flaws here and there that aren't glaring usually, but they are glaring whenever you're going up against Ben Roethlisberger and Tom Brady. But if Patrick Mahomes, at his value, if he outperforms his value, and the Chiefs start spending a little more wisely, carrying some less dead cap space in 2019, whenever Alex Smith's contract, I think, would be off the books, Macklin's would be off the books, Jay Howard's off the books after this year, Tom Bahalis will be off the books after next year. Whenever you're playing with no dead cap space, you've got a quarterback that's outplaying his value. Maybe Roethlisberger's retired. Maybe Brady's in his last year or two. If you trust Andy Reid and John Dorsey as builders, and I tend to trust them as builders, not so much as contract extenders, apparently. But if you trust them as builders, then yeah, the Chiefs' best window is in a post-Brady, post-Roethlisberger AFC. But something that the last caller brought up is the comments that Jeremy Maclin made kind of on his way to Baltimore. This was with Mike Florio, I think, of Pro Football Talk. Yeah, Charlie's nodding, so it's law. With Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, it's about a two-minute clip here of Florio kind of poking around at Maclin about how he found out that he got cut, what's next, his, like, attitude going on. And there are some, like, awkward pauses in here that don't think of these as awkward. Think of these as telling.
Scale of 1 to 10, how big of a surprise was it for you?
11.
How did you find out?
Through a voicemail.
From who?
John Dorsey.
And what was your reaction when you found out via voicemail?
I was upset. You know, I was shocked. You know, apparently they had been trying to trade me for 2 or 3 months, which, you know, who knows if that's true or not. You know, I would just think that, you know, and they're not entitled to tell me anything, but a guy who, you know, is going into his ninth year would know if he's being shopped or not. But it is what it is. You know, I still have respect for Big Red, still have respect for the organization. You know, I'm not going to badmouth anybody or talk any you know, any dirt on anybody. You know, it was an unfortunate situation. They felt like, you know, they didn't want me as a player anymore. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, I'm happy with where I am right now. You know, and I think that might be the last time I talk about what I like to call my former life. So I don't think I want to talk about that anymore.
Well, and just so we're clear, and this is a little bit related to it, they could have come to you, I assume, and said, hey, Jeremy, we're looking at your salary, we're looking at your production, we're looking at your age, we'd like to work something out that you can stay here for a number that makes more sense to us from a cash and cap standpoint. I take it from what you've said that never happened. There was never a discussion along those lines at all?
There was not a discussion with me or my team. I've heard a lot of rumors coming out of there. I've heard, you know, they thought I lost a step, my price tag was too high. Whatever the case may be, you know, I'm ready to play some football. And, you know, that flame that burns inside of a competitor, that thing got a lot brighter. So,
do you think you've lost a step?
No.
I think that last answer was his quickest one. That whole thing, especially whenever Florio asked, how'd you find out that they cut you? That was definitely longer than the delayed that's just like embedded in Skype calls. That was like a 2 or 3 beat pause. Like, do we want to make this a story? And then he did. Macklin's frustrated, saying the fire that burns in a competitor is burning hotter now. You don't hear that a ton from pro athletes, because I think usually athletes want you to think that fire is always burning at 100%. And it's obviously not, because there's a reason that guys say, you know, like, oh man, yeah, in the Super Bowl, I played harder than I usually do, or whatever, you know. And, you know, there's something special, something extra about playing in a playoff game or whatever. You know, so whenever you're playing on the road in Arizona, you're not playing at 100%? Like, well, no, that's not what I mean. Macklin was willing to admit there that he's feeling something different now. Talking about his former life. That's pretty intense. There's some pretty pointed comments there. I think it's very interesting. If you want to talk about Macklin, what the Chiefs are doing, the idea of them rebuilding, reloading, whatever. They're not in any way bottoming out, and they shouldn't be. This is not an instance like with the Royals or with the Sixers or with the Jets. Three different sports, three different teams, three different examples of teams that could, should, or are currently, or did previously, bottom out to rebuild. The Chiefs are not in any of those situations. Whenever we say the Chiefs are rebuilding, it's that what the Chiefs are really doing is they're preparing for a new era. And now what I just said felt bad coming out of my mouth, because that sounds like PR garbage for like whenever the Royals need a slogan after they lose 100 games. Preparing for a new era. Get ready for Raul Mondesi batting leadoff as we prepare for a new era. I'm not trying to give you a t-shirt, because that sounds like a t-shirt for a losing team. But that's what the Chiefs are doing. They're preparing for the Patrick Mahomes era. They want to have a team that's around to win with Roethlisberger and Tom Brady out of the league. Which might be smart, but it's really hard to swallow this year. And this is the same thing that Royals fans are going to go through if they do end up selling the trade deadline. Like, oh man, I get it. I understand. It's probably smart. But it's really hard to admit that you're better off trading away some of your best players. The Chiefs just straight up cut an important offensive weapon from an offense that wasn't good enough last year. And for the record, the reasons for the offense not being very good last year, none of those reasons are Jeremy Macklin. It's a very different beast whenever you start to figure out, well, what went wrong last year. And I think in a lot of ways the Chiefs told you what went wrong last year with their first-round draft pick. Alex Smith took a step backwards. He wasn't making plays. He was just trying to not get in the way of them. And this is where I get frustrated for this season. And as one of the callers from earlier completely hit on the head, Alex Smith is not a playmaker. He is at his best whenever he can make playmakers look good. Whenever he can put the ball out in front of Tyreek Hill, just make a fine mid-level throw, and then Tyreek Hill turns it up for a 65-yard touchdown. That all goes into Alex Smith's stat book. But he's just trying to deliver it. Alex Smith is a mailman. He didn't buy you the package. He didn't wrap it. He doesn't even know what's in there sometimes. That's unfair to Alex Smith. But he delivers it. He just delivers the ball where he needs to go on a good day. Now, I do think this year's going to be interesting because Alex Smith knows that that's his reputation, and he knows that's not good enough, and now he knows he's going to have to do it with DeMarcus Robinson instead of Jeremy Maclin. So I think we might see Alex Smith be a little more willing to push the ball down the field. A little more willing to say, don't give the reins to Patrick Mahomes yet. I'm not ready to give this up. I'm gonna become a playmaking quarterback. Now I think in large part that's not gonna go super well. Cause Alex Smith does have some playmaking abilities, both with his feet and oftentimes through the air in ways where you go, oh man, I didn't even realize Alex Smith could do that. But I think he knows what he is. For all the things you can knock Alex Smith for, I don't think you can knock him for being delusional. He's super smart. And I think he's really self-aware. So I don't think he's going to try to be Brett Favre. But I do think we might see a little bit more recklessness from Alex Smith when he goes, you know, I got to gamble a little bit. Because this team as currently constituted, it's probably not going to work. 913-310-810 is the phone number. I've got the phone number a lot today, but it's because you guys have been calling today. So I've enjoyed that. I've enjoyed getting to hear your perspectives on the Jeremy Maclin situation or anything else that's going on. But I think for now, I'm done screaming about football. This is Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday.
I think we did two really good hours
with Joshua Briscoe.
And we also did this hour
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's my favorite. Sometimes I really do feel like that. Like, oh man, we did two really good hours of radio today. And then also hour three. But right now, we're about halfway through hour three. And so far, I think hour three's been pretty good also. I don't want to jinx. Okay, Charlie just did like the little shaky hand thing. I think hour one was pretty good. Hour two, on point. Hour three, been all right so far. Don't count me out yet, Chuck. Back in the first hour of this fine program, I put out a poll about the Royals. We're talking about the Royals in the first hour, and about this idea of, you know, on the back end of a 6-game winning streak. They lost last night 9-0, but still they're 6-1 in the last 7 games. They won those 6 in a row, and maybe the bats wake up again today. I have no idea. But in a good stretch for the Royals, I wanted to check on the pulse of the fan base to be unbelievably high and mighty about it. I wanted to get the pulse of the city. So tweeted out a poll, 810 retweeted it because I had held Charlie at gunpoint. And this is the question verbatim. If you knew the Royals would win the AL Central and nothing more in the playoffs, what would you do at the trade deadline? Sell and rebuild, or take the division? And the first, 15 votes or so were really, really heavy towards sell and rebuild. And all the responses I've got three or four tweets in response to this, and you got to sell. You got to sell and rebuild, not even close. But there are 325 votes in now. Decent sample size. Sports fans who are awake on Twitter on Father's Day, tweet your dad. 325 of you voted, and it's almost 50-50, which really surprised me. In fact, 53% of people said take the division, which really surprises me. Because at least Charlie and I, literally the only two people in this building right now, Charlie and I just sort of echo chambered back and said, yeah, man, this city has an AL championship and the city has a world championship in the last 3 years. Four, counting this, whatever. Last year, they were 500. This isn't 2011. Listen, you're gonna be like buying and losing guys, not to win a World Series, but to win a divisional title. If you would have said that, you know, before that AL run, you might have gotten, this poll might have been 75% of people saying, yeah, let's get that, let's sell out for the division. And this is essentially what this is asking as well. Saying, do you want to mortgage the future for a division title? And that's it, and nothing else. Not even a divisional title and a chance to make a run in the playoffs. You get the pennant, period. I'm really surprised that with over 300 people, over half of you want that AL Central pennant. It doesn't compute to me, because would you do it in the inverse? Would you give up a bunch of prospects to essentially go get Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Lorenzo Cain for 1 year to win the division? Because that's the inverse. Instead of selling any of those guys to bring in prospects, would you give up prospects to go get those guys for a divisional title? If your answer changes from one to the other, it's because you're emotional. It's because you have an emotional tie to those guys, which is totally fine. I think your average fan base does have an emotional attachment to the team's stars that went and won them a title. But to actually weigh the consequences here and make that choice, you've got to do what's best for the franchise. You could argue that the best thing for the franchise is to win a title or to win a divisional pennant. But I think that's probably a pretty hard case to make.
We should almost make this a weekly poll.
I thought about that, actually, as we sent this one out.
Is this, like, fresh off of a six-game? I know we lost last night, but fresh off a six-game win streak? Like, is this people are, like, and with the division being so bad, yep, like, right now? Like, is this just people be like, oh, yeah, pumped about it? Like, no. Let's wait a week here. If they go 500 over the next week, what are they going to say then?
Well, that's, and this is...
Or lose, or go under 500 over the next week.
You're right, though, Charlie. But this is the thing that frustrates me. This is where I wonder how to help everyone look at it with a little bit more perspective. Because this is right after a win streak. And if it was after a six-game losing streak to this exact same record, you're right, the poll would be different. But it shouldn't be. That's where this all kind of goes off the rails. Now, maybe you can justify a little bit more optimism now because you've seen them hit in a way you haven't seen. But what if they had this six-game winning streak 2 weeks ago? And they were hitting 2 weeks ago, and then they had their cold spurt again. It seems like a pretty reactionary thing to go, oh, wait, hold on. Charlie, if we would have done this poll yesterday during Baseball Tonight pregame, it would have come back differently. Losing last night changed the minds of a few people. I'm confident of that. And it shouldn't. And that's where I am absolutely willing to have my opinion changed. My opinion needing to be changed does not scare me at all. I'm cool with that. But I haven't had my opinion changed on the Royals since before the season. Since I came into this year establishing an opinion for what this team is going to be. I said I thought they'd be a 500 team. That's the worst thing they can be. Because the lose scenario is you go, you keep your guys, you're trying to make a run, and you go 500 eventually, and then you miss the playoffs. And that's part of the risk here. There is a deviation on either side of this poll question where you either say, you know, if they do win the pennant in this hypothetical world, then they can try to string together a series win or two, and then all of a sudden you're in the AL Championship Series, and you go, well, you know what? Who are we to say that they can't win that? You know, you can talk yourself into that. On the other hand, there's deviation on the other side. If you keep your guys, there is no guarantee that this team actually does win the division. And I'm just continually surprised that there are almost 200 of you currently on this poll who have said, I'm more interested in the division than long-term success. In fairness, prospects also don't guarantee success. But no prospect pretty much does guarantee failure. Man, that was deep and profound. I came right off the top of the old dome. Do you hear how hollow my head sounded when I did that? Was that, could you pick that up on the, doesn't sound as full as it once did. I've been graduated for like 2 months. I'm losing brain matter at a rapid pace. Also, totally off the wall, because we're going to move on to some NBA talk here in like 2 seconds. A little bit of a transition. There's an E60 playing on one of the TVs in the studio here. And a second ago, there was just some guy out like paddling on a surfboard. It was being filmed, like recent. Probably a competition of some sort. I don't know. He was just like paddling around. And a shark came up behind him and like surfaced. And he like tried to get up on his board or whatever. And like there's some like thrashing, and he went in the water, and then it cut to black. And now I'm pretty sure they're interviewing that guy's family and showing like videos from his childhood. So I'm not super optimistic about that guy's chances. Also, did you see that Michael Phelps is going to race a shark for Shark Week? Now, according to an SB Nation article, Michael Phelps' like top speed is like 6 miles an hour, which first of all, slower than I would have expected. But compared to other humans, is insanely fast. My average speed while swimming is just whatever the speed is of the current in the body of water that I'm in as I float motionless. Occasionally doggy paddling to try to keep my nose and mouth above water. So the fastest swimming human alive goes 6 miles an hour. And great white sharks, which he will be racing, go 25 miles an hour. So there's got to be some sort of like head start mechanism. I've been thinking about this. I'm thinking that what they could do is they really do go in side-by-side lanes. But Phelps gets a huge head start, try to even it out a little bit, and he gets put in like a really big shark cage that like moves with him. Because if they're not in the same body of water, this whole thing is a big old sham. I don't want to see Michael Phelps race a shark like in a different pool. Be like, oh, what's the time difference between Michael Phelps and a shark? You could do that on your own already. I want them in the same body of water. If he's got to be in a cage, fine. Either of them have to be in a cage. That's fine with me. But if they're going to race, they got to be in the same body of water. Also, how's a shark going to know that it's racing? Like, well, you get like a little shark jockey. Like a, just a very, like a child in scuba gear. Grab onto the fin and like get like a tiny little whip. That's the distraction currently going on in front of me. Is I'm pretty sure a guy got killed by a shark or something. I don't like that. I don't care for shark kind very much. All right, I was going to move on to something else, but I got a tweet from Todd about that poll. Okay, I'm gonna read it. This is a ridiculous question. Sports are competitive. You compete to win every day. Plan for the future without harming the ability to compete now. That's not a thing. That's not possible. You have to prioritize. Because to plan for the future, you have three franchise players who are no longer under contract after this season. To plan for the future, you've got to be willing to sell those guys off, bring back some prospects, so you have a team in the future. Will that harm your ability to win now? Of course. But invert it. Say that you put more priority on winning every day. Switch it up. Say you have to plan for the future. All right. Well, you're gonna lose your ability to win every day. Prioritize the other way. You want to win every day. You're gonna harm your ability to plan for the future. You're either keeping these guys or you're selling them. You can't mortgage them. You can't say, actually, I want to keep them through this season, but get like half of the prospects. You don't get to have both worlds here. That frustrates me so much. Because you're just not understanding the entire concept this is built on. I'm not saying, do you want to compete now or plan for the future? In those kinds of terms, because we're not doing ideals here. I'm saying, make choices. You have to make a choice on these guys, and the act of not making a choice is, in fact, making a choice. That's where this year is more stressful than other years of average baseball. Average baseball this year and not making any moves is making a huge move. Standing pat is a bold statement. Because you're not going to get anything for your stars. And maybe the Royals sign one of them. I'd be very surprised by signing two. All three is unfathomable. But unless that's the direction that the Royals are going in, unless the Glassmore meetings behind closed doors are actually boardroom meetings from Lex Luthor's secret lair with these crazy plans going on, actually they're gonna keep everybody, then you can't just not make a move. It's like watching the shot clock run down in basketball. You're like, well, we're up. Oh, the shark video is back. This does not look good for this. No, it cut to black again. God, that's so frustrating. I just want to know what happened. The name sounds familiar, though. Anyway, sorry, guys. Sharks are terrifying. It's like holding the ball at the end of a basketball game and being like, well, okay, there's a minute and a half left, and there's 10 seconds left on the shot clock. We're up by 5. I don't want to give them a chance to end up cutting this lead down. I'm going to hold on to the ball. I'm just going to hold it. Oh, but if I hold it, then there's going to be a turnover because I had a shot clock violation. But if I shoot it, I could miss. And if I miss, then they get the ball back and they go score again. Ah! And then you just freeze. And then you stand there and you hold the ball. And you get a shot clock violation, and you've done nothing good, and you've lost possession. In this case, it's doing nothing good, and you lose possession of Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer and Lorenzo Cain. You cannot call that a ridiculous question with the cop-out of sports are competitive. Yeah, sports are competitive. Do you want to compete now? Or in the future. you can compete this year or 2 or 3 years from now for a 5-year span. But you're going to have to pick one. You can't do both. You can't keep Hosmer, Moustakas, and Kane and also get the prospects that you would get for trading away Hosmer, Moustakas, and Kane. It's just insanely illogical. By the way, it would be a decent name if we ever wanted to rebrand this show.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
Charlie, it's going to be okay, baby. Listen, if it all goes to hell, I'll talk about myself for half an hour.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Oh, God. That's got to be the worst I've ever sounded on radio. Like, I'm always, like, stuffy or whatever. But last week was a weird show. Welcome back to the final segment here of Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. One more time, happy Father's Day to all those dads out there. Happy birthday to all the dads out there. Charlie, say happy Father's Day to your dad.
Happy Father's Day, Dad.
Nailed it.
You're
nice
the best.
And that's a little, you said a little bit too much.
Too much?
Yeah, I just you could have just probably stuck to the classic of...
Yeah, well, he's the best, so, you know.
Kennel.
That's specifically for beards. We all know that.
No, you got your own. By the way, they keep showing... excuse me. I just died. I think I just swallowed a bird. I think a bird just flew in the studio and then just got stuck in my throat. That was horrible. I just dugotzed. I should be fined for that. That was disgusting. My voice just stopped working. They keep showing the shark attack video on this E60, but spoiler alert, the surfer lives. So, that's good. I Googled it. I was like, I need to know if the surfer guy lives. He did. He survived. So, that's exciting. We can move on now to bigger and better things in the last few minutes of this show. I didn't have time for this on Sports Night. I'm not going to have time for it today either. Like, this today is the first show, I think, since we've been doing Sports Sunday. Where I'd be like, oh man, I have like at least another hour of stuff to talk about, which is a good feeling because it's a terrible feeling to be like, oh man, we got to stretch this last topic into some huge conversation. We don't. But I want to talk about Kevin Durant because the Warriors won the finals. The finals felt kind of like professional wrestling. Like we knew the outcome. Like it felt scripted almost. I'm not going to go all like warrior wife slash mom and say that it was fixed. But it felt predetermined because anything other than the Warriors winning the finals this year would have been a huge shock. Like, since they signed Kevin Durant, it seemed like a foregone conclusion. The finals were fun, but they felt a little stale because of that. But Kevin Durant was the finals MVP, and he was superb. He was fantastic. But he gets crushed for going to a team that set the regular season wins record. And I understand kind of the knee-jerk reaction, like, oh, that kind of sucks. But be honest with yourself for just like a second. If you could do your current job at a more fun place, where your job was easier and you were more successful, you would go too. That's what Durant did. He went to a place where his job was more fun and easier and he was more successful. And he moved from Oklahoma City to Oakland. Seems like a move up. Now, I've got a ton of pushback to this on Twitter at JB Briscoe. And the pushback to this argument is usually threefold. It's usually people saying, well, my job isn't a competition. Two, I can't go back to the company that I just blew a 3-1 lead against, as Oklahoma City did to the Warriors in last year's Western Conference Finals. And three, my job doesn't have fans. And I think you can narrow this down here to actually one reason, and it's kind of amazing whenever you dissect it this way. First of all jobs have some amount of competition, right? Either within the workplace or against some other company. maybe against yourself in some way. You're competing against your fellow workers because you want to get the big raise. Or you're competing against some other company because you're struggling over some account. I don't really know how real jobs work. I'm 12. There's competition in workplaces all the time. In radio, maybe you're competing for airtime. Or you're definitely competing against other stations. There's competition in darn near everything if you look for it close enough. So I don't buy that. Two, let's, to the argument of I can't go to the company that I just blew a 3-1 lead against, let's say that you work for some company that just lost a big account to the big rival company across the street. Or you're working for the smaller company that just like cannot get up on the level as the big guys. Like you're the little brother company in whatever industry you're in. And then the bigger, more successful company offers you a job. We're going to have more fun. You're going to be more successful. It's going to be easier. You are gone. Now, maybe you want to defend, like, well, if I'm working for some mom and pop shop and McDonald's wants to hire me, I'm telling you, part of this deal is you're going to have a better time. I'm guaranteeing that. Because Kevin Durant definitely had a better time in Oakland because his job was easier. He wasn't getting covered constantly. Instead of having just Russell Westbrook, he had the reigning MVP. And also Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, Andre Iguodala. It's a hell of a team. So what does that leave? You have competition in your job in all likelihood. Almost every job has competition. And you do have competitors that you could go to, a bigger company that's more successful than the one you currently work for. You don't own the company. You're not selling the Thunder to the Warriors. You work for the Thunder. Warriors offer you a job. You're going. You're gone. So what does that leave? There is one thing here that I can't solve. You're right. Your job probably doesn't really have fans. If you work for Dunder Mifflin, which is the only comparison I can make here. If you work for Dunder Mifflin, you're not dealing with fans. You're trying to be successful in the workplace. You're not trying to put on a show. The people watching through the window. There aren't fans for your average cubicle job. But why should somebody at the top of his industry, Kevin Durant, choose to stay in the worst city with the worst team having less fun? With that logic, it's to appease you. It's because you, the fan, feel so self-important. If the only drawback to going to a better situation is that the fans are going to be annoyed, then I applaud Kevin Durant for being willing to do that. And say, listen, I know it's going to frustrate the fans. But Durant said, I'm making this decision about my career on my own, for my happiness, my success, my enjoyment, and my legacy. I'm not making my decision to appease everyone except for me. Because Would NBA fans have been happier to see Oklahoma City try to bring in more pieces and compete with the Warriors? Sure. Would every fan base except for the Warriors have preferred that outcome? Of course. I would have loved to have seen Oklahoma City this year with Durant and Westbrook, and I wish the NBA had a half a dozen real contenders. I'm in the same boat as all of the detractors in that regard, but I'm not going to say that an athlete should make his decisions to appease me. It's just, that's totally bonkers to me. I'm glad Kevin Durant did what he wanted to do and didn't have to appease the fans to do it. It's unpopular. He's got a ring now. My name is Joshua Briscoe. Charlie Carlin, thank you for running the board today. I think we had a good, fun show here on Sports Sunday. As far as I know, we'll be back next week to do the same thing, but even better, more fun. Happy Father's Day out there. Bye, Dad!